Hey guys, this is Joe. Today I want to introduce you to our partner Vanta. Achieving ISO 27001 or SOC 2 compliance can unlock major growth for your company and build customer trust, but the process can be time intense and costly. Vanta automates compliance, getting you audit ready quickly and saving up to 85% of associated costs. And Vanta scales with your business, helping you enter new markets. Join 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora that trust Vanta. Claim 20% off Vanta at Vanta.com/startup radio. That's Vanta.com, spelled Vanta.com/startup radio.
Welcome to StartupRad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome everybody. This is Joe from StartupRate.io. Today I do have the great pleasure to introduce you to a new co-host, to Mario. Hey, how you doing?
Hi Joe, nice to meet you. Nice to hear you. We've known each other for a long time and I'm happy to be to jump aboard this trip. I always enjoyed being a guest on your podcast and we've spoken about this. Joining and co-hosting one or hosting one is going to be fun. So thank you.
Totally my pleasure. I have to admit, I have tried to get you as a co-host on the very start of StartupRate.io. So it took only 400 episodes around that to get you on board. Easy peasy.
Kind of have to, you have the determination, and that's always what I loved about this show and this podcast. So yeah, I'm really grateful that you kept plugging away at it. Now I'm here.
That is great. Let us go a little bit through what you've done, what qualifies you for being the co-host of Deep Tech Germany here. I have met you at the very first startup weekend here in Frankfurt, and actually you're one of the fathers of the Frankfurt startup scene. You got the first startup weekend to come to Frankfurt, maybe even one of the first in Germany. But can you tell us a little bit the story, the background, how this all got started here?
Okay, sure. So let's go a little bit farther back. So I was always a nerd. It's meaning I'm one of these kids that learned programming at the age of 12. I basically was always interested in tech, not just playing games, making games, like writing code for websites. I got, like, next to school, I got a job writing one of the first mobile websites. I was always interested in playing around with technology. And so around when it came to time to go to university, I realized that when I was in the first semester at university, I realized, the people around me aren't, like, that interested in tech at one hand, but also not interested in, like, building something, actually. Like, they were just interested in getting a job. And I was more in, at the time, already had, like, written work, had worked on 3D engines, had worked on interesting web projects. And so I wanted to start something, basically, and learn more the business side of things. So in university, I had trouble finding like-minded people. I studied, my first university was in Koblenz, and there wasn't that much of an entrepreneurial spirit. Luckily, I lived in Frankfurt at that time for several years and already had, like, some friends in the tech community. And so one good friend of mine basically sent me a mail, "Hey, there is this event in Amsterdam called Startup Weekend. This sounds like you should go there." And we basically both bought tickets and then, just went for it, drove to Amsterdam and had an amazing weekend where we basically met lots of like-minded people. And that was basically the point of it. Like, finding people that are interested in not just in building a business, but also interested in raising a community of business innovators and business focused technologists in a certain sense. And I was, from this weekend, was so inspired. I came back and said, like, I need to do something here. I need to do something with that. And Koblenz wasn't the city for me to organize this, because I had lived in Frankfurt so long and I had community there. So I said, okay, let's try to organize the first Startup Weekend in Frankfurt. And
it has to be back in something like 2012. When was it?
That was in 2012. I still have some flyers around here of that event, just for memory's sake.
Mario, I just realized that was 11 years ago.
Yes, we're old. We're getting old. Huh. We're getting old. And so, yeah, so in 2012, I basically, founded this, let's say, loose organization. We didn't even like incorporate or anything, of like-minded people. I just went to several events of different, business-minded folks. Most of them were more like 40 plus. That was the business community back then. Like, not the typical startup 20 plus student kind of crowd that you see in like many startup events. That was not Frankfurt. So Frankfurt was a very serious community around the time. And I wanted to a little bit break the mold. I stumbled upon a couple of students at the university in Frankfurt. And through one way or the other, we started even the Frankfurt, we called it back then Frappe, the Frankfurt University Entrepreneurship Program. And that student initiative is still running to this day. Like, they're organizing trips to Berlin, trips to Silicon Valley. They doing great community events. So I'm very proud of that. Around this, with this group of some students, some are from the tech scene, we could organize the Startup Weekend. The Frankfurt Innovation Center for Biotechnology was actually the first organization that kind of bought on. They basically said, yeah, you can have the location. We just give you the location on that weekend. We know it's going to be, because you have to imagine getting in a location, not just for an evening or a day, but for a full weekend, Friday to Sunday evening, is something that's not that easy to get. And the Frankfurt Innovation Center, and especially the manager back then, Raphael Schlapper, he was really just in on the idea and basically gave me permission to host the event. And basically that kickstarted a lot of things in my career. Besides all the tech stuff, I just got an entrance through that to speak to people in pharma and biotech. I got an entrance to speak to lots of, people I would need for that event. Find myself speaking to lots of CEOs, because I kind of needed a jury and judges and these types of things. I needed mentors. So I was basically, it was for me personally, a very career building, but also personality shaping environment, because to organize such an event, you kind of have to get out of your comfort zone. And to make it a good event, you have to not just expect that people will come, but be out there, be selling it, be selling the idea, be selling the concept, and get in contact with the right people. And so that was Startup Week in 2012. We organized it. 150 people came. We had great food, some talks, mentors. It was a big jolt for the startup ecosystem here in Frankfurt. I think that's what many people tell me to this day. And I think the winners of the first Startup Weekend, they just celebrated their 11th year existence, and they've just were awarded a prize, a startup called BetterVest. I'm still still proud of, just being the place where they came together, in a sense. So that was something that's always good to know. So at the time, I was working on startups that I was building. Basically, after we've organized this event, some of the one of my co-organizers of the event, Clemens, he said, we're helping all these people start businesses, but we're kind of not really starting one ourselves. And I have this idea. And I said, oh my God, He said, yeah, I want to have the, I want to do something for like something really masculine. I want to do something around protein powders and so on. I was like, okay, where's this going? And he was like, yeah, there is this subscription box idea. You have heard of this, like glossy box with like perfumes and samples. Let's do this for bodybuilders with protein powder samples and so on and call it muscle box. So I said, ah, come on. That's much too easy to do. Like, it's just a simple e-commerce business, not that interesting. And he said, well, if it's that interesting, then let's see how he can do it. And then, yeah, he registered the domain. I built the tech behind it to make it work. And we got quite some revenue through that. And, yeah, it was one of my first businesses that I really incorporated, where it really went to the notary, formed the legal entity, and all these things. But sadly, the startup failed. For reasons that are mostly in the dynamism, us being like very not flexible enough to pivot to the point where it would have worked. We kind of held that idea too strictly. We kind of wanted to sell that box. If we would have like pivoted and probably created our own brand, because the brand work was really well done. We probably could have made that work, but we were too young to see that and go for it. With that off my shoulder, I basically took over the agency that I was working for most of my time that I was since school, basically. It was a web development agency. We did marketing projects for larger brands like Red Bull and VW and so on as a subcontractor. And basically, that agency, I kind of grew very quickly to like 6-7 employees, lots of customers in all over Europe. And that went just well, but it wasn't something that I was interested in because it was just building other people's dreams, ideas, and thoughts. This is something where I basically said, okay, like I just need something else. And I basically got in the habit of organizing events out of procrastination, meaning I organized a monthly founders table. It was like an event where company founders could get together, share a beer, and talk about their sorrows. I tried to become part of that like bartender personality. Just come to me, tell me, and we'll just talk shop. Stuff that you maybe your friends won't understand, but we will. That was the idea behind it, and it worked quite well. It was one of the largest meetup groups in Rhein-Main for the longest time.
Mm-hmm. I'm just checking the website. Sure. It's still around on Meetup, and it has more than 5,100 members.
Yes, but ever since COVID, we stopped organizing this. That's I wanted to get to later than that, but basically. It was a good time. And then Startup Weekend 2015 rolled around. And I was once again on the hunt for judges, on the hunt for mentors and so on. And one of the mentors I had for the Startup Weekend in 2012 was René Maudrick. He was the CEO of Fastbill back then. And we just got to talking. Different things like I tried using Fastbill for MuscleBox for certain reasons, and we just talked shop a lot. And basically, before the Startup Weekend rolled around, he kind of asked me like, "Mario, why don't you become my CTO?" And then I said like, "Actually, I'm not really happy being a CEO of an agency, changing, running from project to project, not being very technical in most of my tasks, and." I was always admired Fastbill for the not the technology itself, but like the vision and the focus to helping founders just be founders and be supporting be basically the person that clears the pathway for them. You know, running a business in Germany with all the tax regulations, with all the financial duties, is not that easy, and having a piece of software that aims to make this easy to understand and easy to manage was something that was just a nice goal. So I could see myself doing that and could see myself supporting René on his mission. And so I joined Fastbill as a CTO with my entire staff. Like the entire staff just merged into that company. And ever since then, that was end of 2016, I was the CTO of Fastbill. And so, yeah, that is basically how I got into that role. So just being present, being very technical in the day-to-day work that I do, just because consulting different larger entities on how they should develop their projects and like actually being hands-on in the code with them. Just so I could then like be the person certain people trust with complex technical problems, technical questions. And then basically being there when somebody's needed and making that jump into the unknown, as they say in Frozen.
People can already tell you have children.
Yes, yes, yes. Two of them very happy about that. So that's how I got into Fastbill. At Fastbill, we kind of devised a plan on how to grow and win the market. We raised venture capital through two rounds, basically, and ultimately developing multiple interesting technology stacks, a multi-banking solution, all kinds of regulatory hurdles on the way, some tough times, some beautiful times. And at the end of it, basically, was the exit. We sold to FreshBooks, one of the largest North American players in the accounting market. And at that stage, I was already, I was already in the mood for a change, so to say. And FreshBooks offered that, basically. They said, hey, Mario, you don't have to stay CTO of FreshBooks Germany. You can do something else. We are looking for somebody that helps us integrate all the companies we want to buy around the world. And that sounded interesting. So it came with lots of flights to Mexico, for instance. They acquired a company there. Also Canada, Toronto there, where their main office was or is. And yeah, after roughly 1.5 years of doing that, FreshBooks went through a phase of downsizing, and basically we decided to just part ways because I was already doing at this point, 8.5 years of accounting, where I was wanting to see different things in the tech landscape. AI was just all the rage. I had spent already basically 90% of my free time that I didn't spend on my kids. I spent playing around with all the generative AI topics. I built some retrieval augmented generation tools. I just wanted to know like what can be done. And so kind of parted ways. And now I'm like kind of a freelance AI consultant for some companies, but also a mentor for lots of tech companies, smaller tech startups that just have a CTO, and just that person also doesn't have the decade basically of experience that I have. So wants somebody on the side, and I do that a lot these days.
Mm-hmm. I see. What kind of deep tech topics are your main interest? You already mentioned AI. I remember vividly when we've been in Barcelona at EU Startup Summit, you went on into a lengthy, but for me, understandable explanation what large language models are, like in terms of hills and valleys and so on and so forth. By the way, great evening. And ever since I associate you with AI, but not only AI, right?
No, like that was actually the gift that I received from my tenure at Fastbill. I always had to have on the one hand, the long-term technological strategic view, but also the day-to-day, how do we keep this from like burning all down view of the technological piece. So I had to have a 360 degree in all kinds of things tech. And deep tech is just so interesting to me because it can fundamentally change how you reason about technology. In the sense that it might be that just changing out a piece of your core infrastructure reduces your costs by tenfold, And suddenly you have enough resources to hire two additional people, which then can scale other things in your business. But you may not be aware of this if you do not have that overview, if you do not know where is my money going, if you do not know how is my tech even built. Like I'm speaking relatively often with CTOs that do not know how their infrastructure is actually comprised, because they think they can abstract away that understanding in some senior architect who has different goals than the CTO has. And that is something where I always, I'm always interested in keeping up to speed and keeping an understanding of how things work, how they are put together, what they cost is a very big point. Like that is something that many, many people around the whole AI debate currently have out of their view. They just look at the possibilities, but not how that fits into the whole cost structure of building software. And that is something which is deeply fascinating to me.
You can, as I would say, be an external CTO plus obviously a software development accountant.
A software development accountant. Like there is one of the people I admire on Twitter. His Twitter handle is QuinnyPig, Corey Quinn. He calls himself a cloud economist. Basically what he was a software architect, and he basically decided, hey, calling myself software architect doesn't get me as many leads as calling myself the person that saves you money on your cloud spend. And that is just a beautiful way of reasoning about his part of the infrastructure. Because yes, if you're a good software architect and you can reason about cloud spend very well, you can save companies millions of dollars. But if you basically say I'm a software architect, you can build them like what, 15,000, 20,000 euros a month. If you say, hey, I'm gonna save you 1 million a month, I'm going to bill you 200,000 that for that month. And it's still going to be reasonable for the company. So that is something which I found always to be admired. And it's also something which just goes to show where if you can bring these different points of views together of technology and how it works, then you can like make a material difference into it, not just the business, but also like the lives of the entrepreneurs and the employees.
Two questions. One, did you try poutine in Canada and did you like it?
Actually, it's kind of funny. I have to say, I loved Canada. Every time I was in Canada, I loved Canada. I loved poutine, but I didn't love poutine for like the reasons that the Canadians suspect that it's just good. I had childhood memories of it because my mother used to make a dish that was very similar to poutine unknowingly. It's just very common was very common for my mom to like make pork roast, have some gravy left over, and the next day hand some schnitzel or something with fries and the gravy from the pork roast. And so the gravy and the fries always like were very nice childhood memory. And then just adding some cheese is not actually some cheese curds is not that far off. So I was always like happy with poutine. And whenever I get to Canada, I gotta have it. It's just a thing.
And second question, you talked about Mexico. How spicy could you get in Mexican food?
Ooh, that was an experience. Like, I like spicy food. I really like spicy food. But when the Mexican team basically, when they invite you to a Mexican restaurant, and you say, "Please give me the spiciest thing you have," basically, they don't give you the spiciest thing they have. They don't, because they know. And then you try the spiciest thing and it's hot, but it's manageable. And usually after like a couple of drinks, they say, hey, we'll get you the thing that's actually spicy. And then you get afraid. And yeah, so I didn't sleep very well that night. Let's just say this. But I was man enough to completely finish that dish. I did not say I was the gringo that didn't finish the dish. I had beautiful times in Mexico. I really missed the team there. It was beautiful.
How much beer did you need to get that spicy food down?
it was at least a liter, at least.
I see. What type, people can expect you to do an interview like once a quarter, maybe a little bit more frequently from time to time. Yes. Maybe we'll get together from time to time and discuss some technologies, or you can smart me up on technologies and we will also broadcast that. I would be curious, what are for you the most exciting topics going forward? Because right now everybody seems to do AI. As you said, a lot of people don't give thought to the prices associated with it. How much do I have to pay for it in terms of startups? Do you think AI is the topic of the next year, at least?
The thing is, AI in itself, yes, but not just, it's not just AI in itself that is interesting or valuable to talk about. It's the repercussions of AI being the omnipresent force driving things. For instance, if you just look at the whole search engine optimization landscape, there's content farms out there dropping hundreds of thousands of, let's say, halfway decently written articles into Google, and Google doesn't seem to cope very well right now. I see websites ranking in Google that shouldn't be ranking, or that wouldn't have been ranked with the same quality of code just a year ago. So something's off there. And that's just a tiny aside of AI being able to do things at scale that would have been 100 or 1,000 times more expensive than they have become. And that is something where I'm really interested in also other angles. And that has technological implications, meaning how do I as a business defend myself against attacks that are AI driven? And you will hear me use this phrase AI driven a lot, because you can basically everything that a knowledge worker can do, if you call it AI driven X, then you can see the same thing just 1,000 times cheaper at the scale of 100,000 times. And what does that mean, and how does that change the fundamental technology in so many different ways? That is something that deeply inspires me, that inspires me when I think about how software development should work. Like GitHub Copilot is one of the applications that has been thrown around there, but there's many more in that area. And that is to me not a discussion about how does this whole thing of generative AI that we've been talking about work? That is an interesting subject in itself. Like, what can you build with it? Like I said, retrieval augmented generation tools and so on, LangChain, these frameworks around agent generation. There's all interesting topics in itself, but this is a whole, let's say, game changer for how our technological society works. And that doesn't mean we will just talk about AI, but that just means we will talk about how does a world with AI look like? How does a world with Gen AI in everyone's pocket look like? Like just yesterday, my kids were talking to the ChatGPT bot on my phone, where just it has now this voice activated option where you can just speak to it, and the latency is good enough that my kids enjoy the conversation. So that is something that wasn't a thing even a month ago. And with this, are we going to interact with this? There's car makers out there trying to implement software to have a version of this running locally in the car. What does that mean for the supply chain of the car manufacturing? Like, everybody's trying to get GPUs that can do Gen AI. I'm going into the weeds here. You know, I can talk about this for hours. I'm just saying, like, we're talking about a world with AI. That doesn't mean we just talk about AI. But for instance, one of the guests that are upcoming, he's built an amazing log management software, which sounds relatively boring, but his software is so technologically advanced compared to other solutions, that he is 100 times cheaper when it comes to storing your logs than any other solution. Which, if you have to store 1,000 times more of data that's been thrown into your systems because the AIs are doing that, he becomes very relevant. And this is what I'm talking about when I say cost plays a huge will play a huge factor when dealing with AI, when dealing with modern systems. And that's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out.
When you've been talking, there is another secret I can spell out here. We're both pretty geeky in loving science fiction, especially yes. Audiobooks.
Oh, yes, yes. We're both fans of the Expedition Force books.
Yeah. Craig Anderson. Maybe we shouldn't have told that.
those books are really good, but there's like... I'm a huge fan of Ian Mang's books, like Consider Phlebas and all of those culture series novels. They're beautiful. The Murderbot Diaries, I love them as well. So many books. But also, I'm a the only fantasy series that I love is Terry Pratchett, like the Discworld books. They kind of like, if I wanted the main influence on like my cultural upbringing, I would say the Discworld books. If I have something that could be considered a conscience, I would say my mother and the Discworld books are equally responsible for that.
I have to admit, like Peter F. Hamilton, he got me into all the audiobooks, because I have to admit I only started really to listen to audiobooks with his books. By the way, we link it down here in the show notes, a few of the books. Mario? Was a pleasure talking to you. Looking forward to our future collaboration and just wishing you a very nice November day, even though it looks like the sun never came out today.
Yes, let's see. Thank you so much. And I'm looking forward to what we're going to do together.
Yes, everybody who'd like to learn more, go down here in the show notes. There will be Mario's LinkedIn profile, as well as his email, as well as his Twitter account.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.